Welcome to the global edition of our Net Group Investments quarterly highlights, where we profile some of the interesting takeouts from our recent fund manager workshop with our global best of breed managers. To hear the full fund manager presentations or for more information about our funds, visit the Net Group Investments website or access more of our content via LinkedIn, YouTube, and podcast channels. In this episode, we discuss the challenges which led to global markets closing in negative territory in Q3. We talk to a seasoned emerging markets portfolio manager about the top performing stocks in his portfolio. We also hear from a contrarian value manager about the promising opportunities in his universe. We then unpack some of the headwinds currently facing global corporates and how to spot resilient global entities. We end this episode with a deep dive into major global property themes and how they are likely to play out going into 2024. In a challenging investment landscape marked by persistent inflation and interest rate hikes, Paul Simons provides insights into his comprehensive market outlook and the positioning of his portfolio.
The realities of higher interest rates for longer are now settling in. For 40 years, bonds have been in a bull market, central banks coming to the rescue anytime that looked like it was reversing. But the return of inflation, unexpected by many central banks, has given them and everyone else a fright. And there seems to be a significant commitment to eradicate that, but it's going to take time, and there are still pressures coming through. The inflation story, inflation data releases are keenly anticipated, but don't yet present a clear picture of the corner being turned. So, with that in mind, whilst we think there's still some way to go with dealing with that and with bond yields, we do recognize that they have increased significantly. The chart we're looking at now shows real bond yields in three major bond markets, the yield after inflation. And after these fell sharply negative when inflation returned end of 2021, 2022, they have now started to go back in the right direction. And in recognition of that, we have started to increase the duration of the portfolio. So this didn't apply in quarter three, but a couple of weeks ago, we increased the target for duration in the fixed income portfolio to 5 years. So still pretty conservative. It's not suggesting that we think yields can't go any higher than here, but it's recognizing that the risks are more balanced now. This is a chart showing the inflation components in the US. And whilst the goods products that were in short supply and hence seeing price pressure, durables and non-durables, have started to fall significantly, services inflation, which is 60% of the total, is still pretty robust. So this isn't going to go away overnight, and central bankers certainly seem committed to dealing with it. Similar story here, bond yields starting to increase, but probably some further to go. This is one of the charts which we think is worth keeping an eye on. The return of inflation has empowered unions in markets where they're still significant to do their job and demand better rewards for employees. For many, many years, employee compensation as a percentage of company revenues, here shown in the US, but this chart would apply in many other places as well, fell significantly. Now, with shortages of labor and a return of inflation, I think it's reasonable to expect that this chart will be pushing back upwards, and that's a pressure on company earnings and a pressure therefore on valuations of companies, which isn't reflected here. And this is behind our caution on the US equity market. This well-known series, the cyclically adjusted PE, tries to smooth out the effects of an economic cycle on the company's earnings. So it takes the average earnings over a 10-year cycle, compares with that with the valuation of the stock market. And whilst it's some way off its peaks, it's still significantly above its long-term average. And as households, companies adjust to higher interest rates and employees demand better rewards, earnings, which are behind this chart, we think will be under pressure. And that isn't reflected in the valuation of the US equity market. One of the helpful release valves for inflation over the last 30 or so years has been deflation exported from China, driven by an expanding labor force. And this chart, however, shows that those days are over. The labor force, working age population, is shrinking in China and will continue to for many years. Fewer people working every day means that there aren't multiple applicants for job vacancies, and wages need to attract people, which I think is something that will be felt a long way from China for quite some time to come. So the eye of the storm, markets have been relatively subdued over the last few months, adjusting to the volatility that we saw last year and to a certain extent the year before, the very rapid increase in interest rates. But is that the calm passing overhead? Are we about to head into a period of heightened volatility? There's certainly a chance of that. The adjustments that households and companies need to make to interest suddenly being a significant expense, having had for so long it not being anything really at all on a company income statement, is going to take a long time to adjust. The adjustment for households of mortgage costs still isn't being fully felt because of the effect of fixed rates in many major markets. So we think there's a good chance of volatility ahead. We want to remain conservatively positioned to ride that out and try and repeat the low downside capture and the lack of volatility, which is the target of this portfolio.
Brian Coffey shines a spotlight on his standout stocks within emerging markets.
The positives, Varun Beverages, this one's been in a number of quarterly reviews. It's the Pepsi-Cola bottler in India, gaining share and introducing new products. That had another strong performance for us. In Taiwan, Alchip Technologies is a design house. So these guys help the people who are working on the AI design the chips that they use. So because of that link to AI, they've been seeing very strong demand from clients global, as well as some from China. And that had a very strong quarter. And then in India, Larsen & Toubro, which is an engineering and construction business, that benefited from strong demand in the domestic economy, but also they've got good exposure to the Gulf region. And new projects in energy have been a positive in that region.
Brian Salmo unveils the interesting opportunities he's uncovering for his global multi-asset portfolio.
This year, we've spent some time looking at the sort of distress and stress in, you know, U.S. real estate. That's both on the equity and debt side. I think we're, you know, optimistic that the prices have been somewhat indiscriminate for some very high quality assets. And so we've been able to pick up some U.S.-centered REITs, as well as some both corporate bonds and asset-specific bonds at, you know, attractive yields to maturity over the last, say, 6 to 9 months. The other area that we've been spending some time on is on, you know, European holding companies. That's a space where the discounts have widened out quite dramatically, and often the underlying assets are attractive and, you know, trading at very reasonable prices, and through the holding company, you're able to buy them at an either even further discount. And then lastly, I would say that we've either bought or increased our exposure to a few consumer staple companies. And these are globally diverse businesses, usually with the vast majority of their revenues and profits coming from outside of the U.S. One headquartered in the U.S., the other two headquartered in Europe and in Asia. And so that's an area that we think is interesting as those companies trade at sort of low double-digit multiples to free cash flow. They have strong balance sheets and, you know, pay a pretty steady and improving dividend.
It has been a difficult operating environment for global corporates. Mike Mort discusses some of the headwinds currently facing corporates.
In terms of that second part about the kind of the earnings growth sort of headwinds that corporates face, we actually think some of the tailwinds are starting to reverse that companies have had over the past decade. And so operating margins recently were at sort of the highest level in 30 years. They have retrenched back, and that's in the top right-hand chart. But the one point I'd say here is that's obviously your operating profit, which is operating margins, is you've got your revenues and your operating costs within that. But there are also, that's not what you get as an investor. As an investor, you get basically the net income if they can obviously convert that into cash. And that means that your operating profit, you've got non-operating costs in there as well, which are things like interest costs on debt or tax rate as well. And if you look at these costs, so the non-operating costs below that, so to get to your net income margin, the bottom right chart shows for manufacturing companies, the change between 2010 and 2021 of some of these factors. And actually, nearly three quarters of the net income margin expansion has been driven by interest rate declines, sort of 50%, and then tax rate declines of 23%. So going forward, we think there are several pressures on operating and non-operating costs. And the non-operating costs are ones that aren't actually necessarily as perceived as greatly by investors. So we do think with an interest rate reversal, wage and fuel cost increases, which to be fair, you know, have moderated, but they're still growing, and tax rates that have actually seen corporate tax rates decline and now start to increase again. We do think there are actually some of those tailwinds that companies have seen that actually move into headwinds. Therefore, we think there are two things that will be the outcome of this: a premium placed on organically profitable growth companies. And the reason why I say organically profitable is because cost of acquisition was also increased. And so you want companies that have the ability to grow profits, using their own means effectively. And be able to pass on cost to customers and grow their revenues. And secondly, strong balance sheets are also likely to be rewarded because, you know, if you've got a lot of debt and your interest rate changes significantly over a period of time, that will have a amplified effect on your cash flow at the end, as well as also having, a less levered balance sheet will also give you more flexibility and optionality.
We dive into the world of global property markets with Robert Promisel, as he uncovers the fascinating themes he's identifying within this dynamic sector.
What I want to talk to you about was really some of the thematics that are driving portfolio construction. And we're in as we enter a period of more uncertainty in the economy and frankly, politically, we're doubling down and really focus on areas that are really necessity real estate, really economically relevant real estate. So that would include community shopping centers, retail and community shopping centers in the U.S. These are grocery anchored shopping centers. They're located in the communities they serve. And because people go to the grocery store quite frequently, we find that visitation to these properties has remained quite robust. And in fact, we're starting to see tenants that otherwise would have been in regional malls move into the shopping center environment because they continue to have the draw, the customer draw. So as a result, occupancies for the shopping center companies in the U.S. Are really near all-time highs. And I'd point out that the properties owned by the shopping center companies in the U.S. are among the best in the country. There might be a retail oversupply issue, high retail square footage, square meters per capita in the U.S., but the properties that the REITs own are really well positioned. And so as a result, we're starting to see tenants actually compete for space that becomes available in some of these stronger centers, and the shopping center REITs are able to drive rents at or above the rate of inflation. We're also seeing retailers, the tenants themselves, start to kind of fit out their stores and provision them for last mile distribution. Again, last mile distribution is one of the most expensive, is probably the most expensive part of the distribution network for e-commerce. And we're starting to see a bit more provisioning for e-commerce fulfillment out of retail stores. Stores like Target are actually leasing slightly larger space in order to accommodate that. The other area I want to talk to you about was rental housing. We call it residential. In the U.S., it really is across a broad spectrum that would include traditional purpose-built multifamily buildings, apartments. It would include single-family residential, so single-family homes that are now rented out. It would also include manufactured housing, which are mobile homes. We find that, particularly in the U.S. and in other markets as well, housing is undersupplied. Coming out of the GFC, we never really saw the robust rebound in housing construction that was necessary to accommodate all of the new demand that was occurring due to population growth and immigration and whatnot. As a result, the operating conditions are quite strong. Occupancies are high. We've seen some supply response, but not enough to really curb rent growth. And so we're really quite constructive on residential rental housing. Then healthcare is really, it's a few different things, but what is exciting to us about healthcare today is seniors housing. Seniors are just beginning to age into the prime senior housing demand cohort. So think of the baby boomers who were born kind of 1943 to 1948. We're just starting to see them crest 80 years old, which is really when we expect to see really quite a pickup in seniors housing demand. We're also still recovering from the occupancy that was lost during the pandemic. We're midway through what is going to be probably a 4 to 4.5 year occupancy rebuild. And then finally, I'd point out that because construction finance has become much more challenging for commercial real estate, with just a few exceptions, we've seen very little senior housing construction. And so the supply outlook for seniors housing is really quite benign today compared to what it's been historically. So as a result, we actually expect there to be several years of occupancy growth and above inflation rent growth. Then I want to talk to you a little bit about data centers. We expect to see further digitization of the economy, where we expect to see more and more data that is housed in purpose-built, professionally run data centers. Everyone talks about AI, and AI is a very strong demand-driving thematic that just hasn't mattered yet on data center demand. We expect that to manifest and matter over the next kind of 3 to 5 years. We're just not seeing that demand yet, which is why we think the data centers on the attribution side maybe got a little bit ahead of themselves. But we remain really quite firm in our commitment and our belief that data center demand is going to continue to grow quite robustly from here. And then I just want to mention logistics, which, you know, logistics has really become the backbone of almost everything. We've seen, e-commerce and the drive towards efficiency of distribution really power demand for modern logistics facilities. And it's really two different types of facilities. One are the large bulk distribution facilities that are located in areas that can then serve the last mile distribution facilities, which are located really within the communities and close to the communities they serve. And in those situations, last mile demand for properties really is really quite keen, because there's many other uses that can happen for those properties than just logistics, such as housing or retail. And so we find that there's real scarcity value for certain types of logistics properties. As a result, they have very strong and robust rent growth.
You can access more information about all the fund manager workshops at Nate Group Investments website, YouTube, or through our podcast channels on all major platforms. This has been your Nate Group Investments quarterly briefing. Make sure to check back at the end of February 2024 for our next edition.